I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. Zuhair Rekhan was a policeman in Iraq. He was a young man, just 27 years old, with a wife and a young child. One day he was taking a break at his police station and kneeling on his prayer mat when Saddam Hussein's intelligence police snatched him. Accused of belonging to a banned Islamic organization, he was convicted of treason in a secret court and hanged shortly after his 28th birthday. Now, 6 years later, his wife has come for the first time to the Iraqi Human Rights Office seeking justice.
My husband was executed in the days of Saddam, and I want to claim my rights.
What do you want the human rights organization to do for you? What can they do?
I want to be compensated. I have a child, and since 1997, I haven't received any of my rights.
Did the people in the human rights organization say anything to you today?
They told me to come the next year, on the 1st of January, because the new budget will be decided there.
She wears the black abaya of a widow. She seems unperturbed that she may still have to wait for compensation. She's also hoping, someday, that the men who killed her husband might actually be brought to trial.
Inshallah.
I hope so, but I claim Saddam to be questioned and judged legally.
Do you think there will ever come a time in Iraq when Saddam Hussein and the members of his government will be brought to the courts and will be held accountable for the death of your husband and all the other people?
Why
not?
Inside the office, Zainab En-Naimi has a stack of documents, lists of names of the people who want compensation and justice for family members who were killed by Saddam Hussein's regime.
We are trying to help these people by giving them hope through words, through organizing files for them, keep it here for the future. Hopefully that there will be a government in the future that will look in these files and look at their cases.
But she says there are also many people who have come looking for help in taking America to court, people who want money for houses that were destroyed when U.S. tanks rolled into this city. But every time she meets the U.S. lawyers, she says, they tell her that they will do nothing, that they consider the damage, according to the Geneva Convention, to be an act of war.
We hope someday, she says, that there will be an Iraqi government, a decent government, that will apologize to these people in a proper way and stand with them in making those claims. This, she says, is more important than money. It's a way to respect the dignity of the people. On today's edition of The Connection, we are looking at the task of overhauling a justice system that was nearly destroyed over the three decades of Saddam Hussein's rule. And while American and Iraqi judges work to rebuild it, the people are anxious to know if it will also address all the outstanding human rights questions, war crimes, compensation, truth, and reconciliation. We invite you to join us today with your questions. Can Iraqis ever be persuaded to trust the independence of their courts? Will this system be able to look ahead without addressing the human rights abuses of the past? And what can other nations contribute? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us on the program today here in our Baghdad studio, Mahmoud Osman. He is currently one of those serving as a member of the Iraqi Governing Council. Welcome to the program, Mr. Osman.
Thank you.
Have you here. With us from a studio in Princeton, New Jersey, Superior Court Judge Donald Campbell. He is also a Major General in the U.S. Army Reserve, and in that capacity has been working here in Iraq, helping with the reconstruction of the judicial system. Judge Campbell, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be a part of it.
And I guess it really has been a reconstruction in almost every sense of the word, from your point of view.
You're speaking to me?
Yes, I am.
It was. When we arrived in Baghdad, we found that none of the courts were open, that none of the judges were functioning, or at least very few were. And basically, it was starting from scratch. It was a wonderful experience for me to watch the Iraqis rebuild their system. Although we were there to help and to support, it was basically the Iraqi effort that made the difference. And I was proud to be there with them and to cooperate with some very capable people in the rebuilding effort.
Mr. Osman, you're from Sulaymaniyah, in the more Kurdish part of this country. I understand that the court systems there are working relatively well at this time.
Yes, of course, the court systems there are working well, but don't forget we have had administration there since 12 years. And that's why it's now working. So it needs time to establish court system. It's much more difficult than other systems, but after all those 12 years, in spite of problems, gradually courts are running their affairs and courts are working there, fortunately.
Judge Campbell, when you reflect on what you saw in the country, other than the broken glass on the floor of most of the courtrooms which had been looted, in terms of just dealing with the judges, talking to them and getting them back on the bench, was that a difficult task given the way that Saddam Hussein had twisted the justice system to his own ends?
It was a good experience. As we visited every judge in the country, when I say we, I mean the leadership of the Iraqi judiciary, Judge Mahmoud and I looked them all in the eyes and were able to find out what their problems were. I remember in the beginning they would tell us the windows were broken, there were no doors on the hinges, and there was no place to dispense justice. And I felt like standing up and cheering at the last meeting that we had with judges when the chief complaint, the first complaint, was that they did not have enough forms to work in the court system. The level of problems changed dramatically when we first started to when I left a little over a month ago.
And Mr. Osman, you bring a particular interest in justice to the governing council, to this country. You were one of the Kurds who was gassed by Saddam Hussein in 1988. I believe you still have problems with your throat for that. Is that correct?
Yes, I have some problem. But in 1987, I was poisoned by thallium, which was worse. I was just about to die. Where 12 people, three of us died in the same day, and some of us were treated for 6 to 7 months till we were cured. So I was also a victim of an explosion which aimed at General Mustafa Barzani, who was heading the KDP on the 29th of September 1971. I was the only Kurd with him in the room, and people exploded, and there were explosions, and fortunately, nothing happened to him or to me. So I have been twice definitely a victim of an attempt which was supposed to work, but God saved us. So we have been victims of Saddam Hussein directly.
So when you look at the justice system today, do you look at it as something which can be used to redress these human rights abuses, these attacks?
Yes. Well, I think two parts are important now. First of all, there should be a system and special courts to judge the people who were criminals of war, committed big crimes against Iraqi people, the people of Saddam Hussein, the main figures, of course. That is very, very important. The second part is that there we should have a fair justice system, which should not be corrupt. It should be very good and working well. And they should make sure that no more there will be violations of human rights in the new system. And we avoid that totally, because that's very important. Because if we have justice and it's correct in our society, that's a very important sign that society is healthy.
Judge Campbell, you have lots of experience here, studying what went on in South Africa, Rwanda, places like Sierra Leone. You did this same kind of work yourself in Haiti. When a system of justice is in such disarray, what's the priority?
It was easy to see in the beginning what needed to be done. The courts couldn't function because they didn't have any facilities. We've pretty much gotten the facilities back up and running. There are a few exceptions. And so that was the first priority. The next priority in my mind was to interview all the judges, and that is an ongoing process. All 700 judges and 150 prosecutors in the country are being interviewed by a judicial review committee, and it's made up of both Iraqis and coalition members. It's half and half, six members, and they vote as to whether or not that judge is capable, or that prosecutor is able to continue to function, or whether he has been in some way corrupted so extensively that he should be dismissed. So that process is ongoing, and you need, I guess, three things. You need facilities, you need the people, the personnel to administer a rule of law, and then finally, you need a rule of law, a system of rules, and an administrative backup that will continue to support all of the other two. So you need the training that these judges will undergo, and the personnel in the court system, the 12,000 people in the court system, will continue to undergo, so that they'll do what we would like, and that is to establish a rule of law that we can all have confidence in.
But is there a danger, Judge Campbell, in your mind, in concentrating too much on crimes of the past while you're in the process of rebuilding the system and looking ahead towards the future?
Well, as Mr. Usman mentioned just a few moments ago, the 24 members of the Iraqi Governing Council are dealing with that, and it is a risk. Anytime a society has as many individuals who took part in criminal acts as we have here during the prior regime, it's difficult to try all of them. And the time, effort, and expense necessary for conducting those trials is something that the Iraqi people have to deal with, and that the Governing Council is currently grappling with. The Iraqi people must decide how much of that time, effort, and expense they will expend in dealing with these past criminals. So it's a tremendous problem. They also have to look at the future and spend that same time, effort, and expense at building their future. So the Iraqi people must make a very important decision, and they're doing that now.
Mr. Usman, though, you must hear from a lot of people who are very anxious for almost a kind of revenge justice now that the Ba'ath Party is gone. What do you say to them?
Well, actually, there are some revenges, not many, too little, I mean, too few, because we are against it. We never encourage it. We talk to people always, and we tell them that nobody should take law into his own hands, and they should allow just the system to work. There should be special tribunals. They will trial the people of the old regime, but because these tribunals are late, it's quite late. We have been working on it for the last 6 months, and in next few days, I hope they will be established. I think it took a long time. That's why some people are really, they can't wait very much, and sometimes you say revenge is happening because some of these Ba'athist criminals, they have killed 7 or 8 people from the same family. So when the family just thinks that they could find this man and so on, some things are happening. We don't encourage it. We want law to prevail.
1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We are broadcasting live from Baghdad. We have guests on the program today who can help with questions about the future of the justice system in this country. And we encourage you to call in. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad.
Support.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad. On a busy downtown street, an Iraqi police cruiser tries vainly to maneuver out of traffic near the Ministry of Justice. It's not that the drivers won't move. They can't. They're stuck. Respect for the rule of law is returning slowly to this country. The ministry building itself is a fortress. Men in black, men with guns, frisk all the visitors, while others watch from behind sandbag guard posts. It's an example of the ongoing fear of attacks from old Saddam loyalists, and something that's frequently discussed by the country's top officials, how to use a new justice system to address the crimes of the Ba'ath Party regime. The Chief Justice of the Iraq Supreme Court, Mitat Mahmoud, says he thinks of the day when Saddam Hussein himself will stand before an Iraqi judge.
From my point of view, he says, the crimes committed in Iraq must be heard in an Iraqi court with Iraqi judges. Because according to international and Iraqi law, the man must be judged in the same place and by the same people he attacked. The Minister of Justice, though, cautions that this will not happen right away. Hashim al-Shibli says Saddam Hussein and his associates will not be subjected to a legal form of vengeance. Punishment, he says, is not everything. Punishing these men as symbols of the old regime is not the medicine that will heal the pains of the people. It's only a part of the issue. Right now, he says, we need safe streets, good hospitals, new schools. People need jobs. Once we have a stable society, he says, then we can put the resources of justice to work on the crimes of the past. So how to establish trust in a justice system that is trying to recover from the 30, 35 years of the Saddam Hussein regime? That's one of the questions we're asking on today's program, broadcasting live from Baghdad. With me in the Baghdad studio, a member of the Iraqi Governing Council, Mahmoud Osman. The New Jersey Superior Court Judge Donald Campbell is with us from Princeton. He's also a major general in the Army Reserve and has just returned from work in Iraq as an advisor to the Ministry of Justice. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And also a reminder that if you go to our website, we are at theconnection.org. You can see photographs of the people we interviewed on the program today, as well as images from the Ministry of Justice and other scenes from our day's travel in gathering this story for you. But a chance for you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. Judge Campbell, it's not just about human rights issues. There are some basic, practical things that have to be done. And one of them, it seems to me, is convincing the people that they can trust this system again. I wonder if I can ask you to take me through the list of secret tribunals and systems that Saddam Hussein had put in place, which skewed the justice system so badly.
What Saddam Hussein did was to set up a separate court. In one way, it was lucky that he bypassed the existing court system and established secret intelligence courts, secret security courts, and use the military courts to establish the control that he needed over the people in order to continue to survive. He directed most of his brutal practices at the people of Iraq through those courts, and he, in some ways, luckily, bypassed, as I said, the judicial system that we now know and that existed 35 years ago, before he came to power. What Iraq had before Saddam Hussein was one of the most progressive and responsible legal systems in the Arab world. The Iraqi people were very proud of it. As you mentioned in your initial comments, it's the Fertile Crescent, the birthplace of civilization. It's the location where the Hammurabi Code first began. So they have thousands of years of experience that they are able to fall back on. In any event, they had a system they were very proud of, and it was corrupted by Saddam Hussein during the 35 years of his regime. What we need now is time within which the Iraqi people will learn to trust the court system, and that only comes with dispensing justice on a daily basis in an appropriate way.
It's funny that you raise the Code of Hammurabi, because in my interview earlier today with the Minister of Justice, Hashim al-Shibli, I had a chance to ask him what he thought about whether or not that raised the stakes at all in the way that the justice system is being reconstructed, knowing that they have this heritage of law from 3,800 years ago. Here's what the Minister of Justice, Hashim al-Shibli, said.
In the
When the principle of law is violated in the country that invented law, he said, then this is a big weight on the shoulder of every Iraqi who has suffered from the former regime over the last 35 years. And Mr. Osman, this must be in some way frustrating to know that the people who lived here so many hundreds of years ago had written the rules that the rest of the world continues to take advantage of, and here you are in Iraq trying to rewrite them all over again.
Yeah, well, that's really frustrating. I mean, it's not good, but that's what is happening. We are dealing with the reality. So many events happened in Iraq. So many dictators came. So many military coups happened. It changed the whole issue, the whole system, and so many invasions happened in this area, in this land. It has been a land of killing and re-killing and so on. So things have been so much destroyed, you don't recognize them. That's why you have to start just from scratch, because Saddam Hussein almost destroyed everything.
So how
there were some systems that were not bad before Saddam, but he just changed everything. He was the law, he was the constitution, he was the state, he was everything, see.
As a matter of fact, one of the toughest things that he did, of course, was break apart the separation of powers, the that was supposed to keep the judiciary on one side and the politicians on the other. It was another point that the Minister of Justice made in his conversation with me earlier today. Here is Minister of Justice Hashim al-Shibli talking about the separation of powers. In our calling for the reconstruction of a civil society in Iraq, he said, we must build it based on the concept of a separation of powers. This is something we've been working to regain all our lives. And when I feel that we're achieving an independent judiciary, I am so happy. I know inside that I'm making an important contribution to the history of this country. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK to join us. Let's take our first call from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Lou is joining us. Hi, Lou.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you. You know, Iraq was a constitutional monarchy, 27 to 1958, and from 1958 to 1963 was a republic. And the constitution was revised to fit the republic needs. Why can't the new regime use that same constitution as a temporary measure for now until they get their act together and make the revisions and the requirements for upgrading and democratizing the system and go on from there? There's no need to reinvent the wheel. And that's my question.
Which was invented here in the first place, but
Absolutely.
We won't go there.
Absolutely.
It's a question, Mr. Osman, for you. The Iraqi Governing Council is under a lot of pressure, even today, from Mr. Bremer talking with White House officials in Washington, saying, you guys are too slow. You need to move ahead on the Constitution. What about Louis' suggestion of using the one from 1927?
Well, actually, there were some laws from 1920, Constitution 1927, actually it's 25, not 27. And then we had another provisional constitution in 1958 after the toppling of the monarchy and having a new system, which is called republic. It's not a republic, because nobody in Iraq ever elected a president, so it's not Republican, it's just a coup and so on. I think we, both of those constitutions, when we are now studying to make a new constitution for Iraq, which could fit these times and the situation in Iraq, we are reading those constitutions, both of them. We are studying them very carefully. There are two documents that we are looking at them and we benefit from them. But we cannot copy any one of them to make it the constitution of these times in Iraq, because time has changed and there are a lot of changes in Iraq that needs new, real new constitution.
Just while we're on the subject of pressure from Washington, are you feeling the heat on the Iraqi Governing Council?
Well, there is some pressure on us, actually. I don't know, maybe I haven't heard Mr. Bremer in Washington. He talked here, he didn't talk much about it. I think we are having our own defects, the Governing Council. We are slow in the process. There are some members of the Governing Council that they are not attending as they should in the meetings, and we should be quicker, definitely. This is one side of the story. I think we should criticize ourselves for it. But at the same time, I think CPA also, they have a lot of defects, they have a lot of problems, and they haven't achieved what they were in this country for. They said gaining the hearts of mind of Iraqi people, they couldn't do it as they should. That's why I think if we want to blame each other, we have a lot to blame them for. So we better sit down together and be frank in our sessions. We have weekly sessions, maybe sometimes twice a week, settle our issues and try to repair and solve our problems rather than put our talks in the media.
Let's get back on today's topic of justice and back to the phones to Toronto, Canada now. Thomas is joining us. Hi, Thomas. Go ahead.
Hello. Won't a lot of people consider this just another case of American hypocrisy if they now speak of the rule of law and respect for law when they flew in the face of international law and sentiment by invading a sovereign country?
Judge Campbell, it sounds like one for you.
Any doubts I had about the efficacy of this war vanished after about a month of listening to the Iraqi people and hearing about the brutality that was visited upon the Iraqi people, the genocide that they suffered under. How anyone in the world can sit back and look at what was done to the Iraqi people, 4 million of whom voted with their feet by leaving the country. That's 15 to 20%. Hundreds and hundreds we found in graves, one of which I mention on a regular basis, where we found 200 bodies. They all had something in common. They were all women and children, and they all had bullet holes in the back of their heads. How we can, the estimates are between 250,000 and 1 million people killed by this sadistic, brutal regime in genocide, and how we can sit back and let something like that occur without any action on our part is something I can't answer. I know that I, for one, having been there, having looked the Iraqi people in the eye, having listened to their stories, having their courageous acts in defiance of his regime, most of which and many of which met with death, I am totally satisfied that what we did there was necessary, and that our efforts on behalf of the Iraqi people are justified in every way.
And in all the months that you were here, Judge Campbell, did anybody ever say to you, "You're American, we don't want any lessons from you, we don't want any legal advice from you, because it was your army that came to this country"?
I had a number of wonderful experiences, one of which was sitting among 500 Iraqi attorneys, and I heard every opinion imaginable from those lawyers. We spoke for hours. I would estimate about a dozen hours, and on about six occasions. And we heard people who criticized us and the handling of the war. We heard people who were extremely grateful to us for coming and removing Saddam Hussein and everything in between. So the ability to speak their mind is alive and well in Iraq. The educated people who I met with came from all spectrums of the society, but there's no doubt in my mind that the vast majority of the people who I met with, and I met with hundreds and hundreds who had an opportunity to speak to me and say whatever was on their mind, were grateful we removed this evil man and were happy we were there. But there are certainly two sides to every story.
Mr. Osman, I want to hear your answer to Thomas's question. He's saying that the United States brought a war to Iraq without the sort of international or UN support that it ought to have had, so the U.S. should not be giving lessons in justice to the people in this country.
Well, I think the United States should have done that in 1991, actually, even before that, because Saddam Hussein has committed so big crimes, nobody can believe it unless you come to Iraq and see the places. Estimation shows that there will be about 260 mass graves in Iraq. Only 40 of them have been discovered till now. And about 1 million people have been killed. We have been, the Kurds were gassed, then people were just buried alive. It's the worst regime on earth. So I think they did a very good job. They came in and removed this regime. We are thankful to them. We are grateful to them, the Iraqi people. And I think anybody who comes to Iraq and sees what Saddam Hussein has done will justify what Mr. Bush and Blair, America and UK did. And there is no hypocrisy in it at all. And they are not giving lessons to people now anyway. They are trying to help Iraqis anyway, establish a good justice. So what's wrong with that? I think if we find their advices useful, we take it. If we find it not useful, we don't take it. We tell them it's not good, and we may advise them on some other things.
Thomas, are you still there?
I am, yes. I just, the numbers that the general mentioned, though, what about a place like Angola? I've heard there's been 5 million people killed in the last 5 years there, and it still seems we pick and choose where we want to set up the rule of law.
Those decisions are above, as we say in the military, my pay grade. I don't decide where we go and where we don't go. Those are decisions made at the highest levels. What I do know, however, is that the Iraqi people are a wonderful people. They have a long and proud history. They are just like you and me. They are like the people in my community and deserve our help. There are many other people in the world who I think also deserve our help. But again, that's something I can't get involved in.
1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, and an opportunity for you to join our broadcast live from Baghdad as we look at the reconstruction of justice in this country, what needs to be done in looking ahead, what needs to be done looking back. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad.
Support.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. We are broadcasting live from Baghdad this hour. Our telephone number for you to join our conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And I had the most extraordinary opportunity earlier today, sitting in an office in the Ministry of Justice with the Minister of Justice at my left hand and the Chief Justice of the Iraqi Supreme Court at my right hand, talking to them, hearing their ideas about the future of justice in this country. I couldn't help but joke with them about the separation of powers. I was the only one keeping them apart at that time. But I did have a chance to talk to the Chief Justice of the Iraqi Supreme Court. His name is Mithat Mahmoud. I asked him whether or not he believed that they could rebuild the trust of the people in the justice system in this country.
ثقة العراقيين بالقضاء ثقة كبيرة جدا.
Iraqis still have a lot of trust in their justice system, he told me, in spite of all the efforts of the former regime to destroy it. But the majority of our judges kept their principles intact. The trust of the people on the street doesn't come from nowhere. It comes through their memory of a decent system established 75 years ago. So this is the trust we are working to regain, even if we have to do it with our blood. Justice is the one safe haven for all of us, and we need to protect it. We are right now, he said, standing on the threshold of a new age. We need to show the people that no one is above the law, and soon people will be willing to obey laws voluntarily. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Join our conversation about justice in Iraq at this particularly interesting moment.
I have with me on the program today Superior Court Judge Donald Campbell, Major General in the Army Reserve, just back from work in Iraq as an advisor to the Ministry of Justice. And with me in the Baghdad studio, a member of the Iraqi Governing Council, Mahmoud Osman. I want to ask you, Mr. Osman, about the last words of the Iraqi Supreme Court Judge Mithat Mahmoud. He said, "Soon people will be willing to obey the laws voluntarily." He's saying in a way that people have lost respect for the law, that they only obey the law when someone grabs them and makes them do it.
Yeah, well, you see, don't forget that Iraqis, they haven't seen any law for decades, you see.
Justice.
As I said, justice and law and so on, it was never applied. The law is written, but it's never applied. Saddam Hussein was saying that what's law or decision? I make one today, I tear it apart tonight. And he was saying, and he was making joke of the Western system, law, I mean, judiciary system. He say they discuss 2-3 months, 4 months till they make a law. I can't do it. We'd make it quickly. So the, nobody has been practicing justice. They haven't been practicing this. They haven't been applying, implementing law. So people almost have forgotten that. They haven't been used to that. They have been used to security, intelligence officers, killings, and mass killings and all these things. So the people have a bit forgotten that, but I'm sure Iraqi people are good people. They are decent. They like justice, definitely. And when it's established, I think they will soon, and in a time which will not be long, definitely get used to it, obey it, and be very happy about it, because they like justice to prevail before anything else.
1-800-423-8255 for you to join us next to Pittsboro, North Carolina. And Jerry, you're with us. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the program. My sympathy is with the ordinary people of Iraq who have suffered through so much, and for people who are trying to save the best of their history in Iraq from former constitutions and legal systems, while perhaps making room for something modern. There's something modern that has come along in our justice system that has to do with international, being able to extradite people for human rights abuses of large scale. And considering that Saddam Hussein was helped into power by outsiders and was kept in power by people in our own government who knew all about what he was doing to people in his own country. And while our country was supporting his attack on Iran in retribution for their having regained their independence,
Jerry, are you saying that Saddam Hussein should be tried outside Iraq?
Well, I'm just asking if there's a tremendous burden of cynicism and low expectations in Iraq by now, after all that the Iraqis have been through. Don't you think it would be constructive to make room in the legal system for them to extradite those people from Washington who were responsible for support for the kind of things that we now, with great hypocrisy, are condemning?
Judge Campbell.
I'm not sure what the answer is to questions like that. I do know that 8 months ago in Iraq, they were cutting ears off of young men who disappeared from the military. They were cutting the tongues out of young men who voiced opposition to military service. And they were visiting brutality on the Iraqi people on a scale that amazed me, that shocked me, that is as brutal and as evil as anything I've ever heard. I heard it with my own ears. I spoke to the people. I looked them in the eye. And those things are no longer taking place. That's good. And all I know is I feel very proud of what we've accomplished in Iraq, and I feel very good about my role in what we did along side by side with the Iraqi people. I was extremely proud of the words I just heard from Judge Mithat Mahmoud, who is a fine individual, the Minister of Justice, Hassan al-Shibli. In the first meeting we had with Mr. Bremer, I and Mr. Bremer spoke, and he said his first priority was to separate the judiciary from the Ministry of Justice, which he was in charge of. In other words, make them separate and distinct. Within 3 days, Mr. Bremer signed the order that was prepared by Minister Al-Shibli, and again, to be part of that filled me with pride. The Iraqi people are building a new system that they can be proud of, building the trust that they need from their people, and that's good.
Mr. Osman, I was in Jordan not long ago talking with a friend there. She was saying that the number of wealthy former Ba'ath Party members coming through Jordan, buying a first-class seat on Royal Jordanian and setting up their home in London was startling. She said there was a joke in Jordan now. They're calling it London Stand because of all the Ba'athists setting up there. Let me take the part of Jerry's question that may be a little bit closer to what we should be looking at here, and that is, can Iraq, could Iraq, would Iraq ever make an effort to try and get the people who had taken money from this country and gone abroad?
Well, actually, I just want to respond to the caller, really.
Yeah.
I think he's right. American administration, some people in America, they supported Saddam to come to power. They supported him during his power, of course. We are sorry for that. Definitely, it was very bad for the United States also. President Bush said 3 days ago when he made a speech about democracy in the Middle East, he said we have been supporting some regime dictators for 60 years, but it didn't give any results. So he's confessing that anyway. In any case, about what you said, I think a lot of rich people who became rich because of Saddam, they were supporting Saddam, and criminals also, they have passed away, and they are now, passed through Jordan to different countries. We are sorry that countries have accepted these people. We are planning the GC, Governing Council, to try to extradite those people, if possible, those countries, at least the money they have, because they have taken out a lot of money, and there is a decision, resolution about that. And I think we do work through diplomatic channels, through other channels, to do whatever we can to do that, because these people, they are criminals, and they have taken a lot of money out, the money which was supposing which belongs to Iraq people.
1-800-423-8255. Next to Raleigh, North Carolina, and Joyce is with us. Hi, Joyce, go ahead.
Hi. To better ensure the justice and liberty you want in Iraq, do you think, one, that more security is needed in Iraq, even if it means more American troops? And do you think that there should be a tighter military rule temporarily, meaning border closings, checkpoints, stricter curfews, in order to prevent...
Well, I think...
Go ahead.
Yes. I think security is one of our big problems, really. I think we have been talking about that all through. We have been asking even the American, the coalition forces, to give the security file, which concerns the Iraqi towns and population, to the Iraqis themselves, make a big force, and they support it budget-wise in every facility and so on, so that we could help the Americans on that. And they should be also very, very serious about controlling the borders, preventing people to come in and make terrorist activities.
So but listen to what Joyce is saying. Joyce is saying, are Iraqis ready to have more American troops, tighter control?
We don't think it needs more American troops. On the contrary, we want to have responsibility, take responsibility by Iraqis and get less American troops, and they could take away the burden from their shoulder. I think it doesn't need more American troops. Definitely it may need less American troops, but new tactics, new policy in which Iraqis and Americans share the responsibility for the security.
Joyce, are you still there?
Yes.
Is that what you were looking for?
Do you feel like in the interim that while the Iraqis are being trained to take over, that you do need more Americans or other coalition forces on the ground to ensure that the terrorists don't destabilize your efforts?
And well, I think we have many Iraqis who are trained. We have a lot of officers from the army. We have a lot of officers from police. They were very good people. They were against Saddam Hussein. Most of them, the ones who were against the regime of Saddam Hussein, they could be recruited back, and a lot of forces should be formed from those people. We have militias from the political parties who struggled for decades against Saddam Hussein. They could be changed into police forces, some of those forces. So we have a lot of people who are already trained. They could do the job. That's why we don't think we need more troops, neither from America nor from other countries. On the contrary, we need more responsibility to be given to the Iraqis.
Judge Campbell, there was a story that you experienced in your work here helping rebuild the justice system that had to do with the swearing in of 8 judges who'd been thrown out by Saddam Hussein.
Yes, that was one of the proudest moments in my time there. What occurred was a friend of the regime's family was killed in an altercation of some sort. The man was brought to trial. He was convicted of the offense, and he was sentenced to death. The Supreme Court reversed that decision because it requires, in Iraq, premeditation in order for the death sentence to be imposed, and they reversed the decision. What Saddam Hussein did was to fire all 9 judges who participated in that decision. It was a clear message, and they put the man to death. We swore in we reinstated, would be a better way to describe it, the 8 of the 9 judges who were dismissed by Saddam Hussein in a very moving ceremony at the Ministry of Justice, where you visited this morning.
And
they spoke out very forcefully for a rule of law and suffered, knowing, I suspect, in advance that their decision would bring retribution from the regime. There were many courageous people in Iraq, many men, judges, men and women, judges who made decisions that wound up placing them in jail, like Judge Dara, who serves on the governing council with Mr. Osman, and I met many courageous
people to serve on the governing council. These are difficult days in Iraq. I want to thank Mahmoud Osman, you, for coming in to be with us on the program today.
Thank you.
And Judge Campbell, it was nice to have you with us. Thanks for your time.
It's my pleasure, my honor.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad.